You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Things are leaking all over the place. It's disgusting, John. It's gross. I don't stand for it.
You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that because at my parents' house, their pipe busted in the kitchen because of a leak. And it just like expanded and now we got no carpet.
What is this, the White House? All of a sudden just leaking everywhere. It's like people don't care.
At first, carpets
are leaking.
At first, I thought you were talking about him peeing on people because like a pee-pee leak.
I thought that's what
you were saying. Okay, but
that's not all.
Okay, my bad.
But this is We Are Error, one of us.net's premier video game podcast. This is not a pissing fetish podcast, as you might have guessed. But the thing that we are actually talking about is all the video game leaks. All the big reveals are happening sooner rather than later.
It's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff. I will say something's like, huh? I'm glad that they're doing that. Yeah. But you know, we'll eventually get into that.
Dude, you totally missed my alley.
What was your?
That was more like an alley. Oops.
What are your puns? What is this?
I said, because I say crazy, because that's the topic of the show.
I mean, I was going to get to that, the crazy.
That was the alley, though.
Oh, okay. Alley. I didn't catch it. I'm so out of it at this point in the middle of the day. It's just like, ugh.
But who are we?
I'm Chris Herman.
And I'm
from One of Us. I tell you what's your name again?
I'm John Romo.
Thank you.
Your boy.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, as we do with every episode, we're going to talk about the news stuff first. This is the error part. We're getting out of the way. We're airing all the errors
You
out.
Even forgot to say, this is We Are Error, one of us.
I said that.
Net's premier video game podcast.
I said that.
Did you?
Yeah. Now you're messing up. We're out of it. We're not recording our usual day. I think that might be that's playing off our heads.
It's Freaky Friday.
Mm-hmm. It is Freaky Friday, and I have to meet my girlfriend soon because she got mad if I'm late. But yeah, let's just jump right into the news, shall we? We have the NPD numbers for February 2017. Total industry sales last month in the United States were down 21% year over year to the $724 million. This includes a 30% drop to $204 million for hardware, a 14% drop to $344.2 million for console and portable software, and a 21% drop to $150.8 million for accessories. Now, the PlayStation 4 was the top-selling hardware system in the month, and for the fifth month running, the PlayStation 4 Slim System 500GB Uncharted 4 Thief's End Bundle was the month's top-selling console. I needed the pause there. I couldn't believe it. The top 10 games for February were number 1, For Honor. Number 2, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard. Number 3, Grand Theft Auto 5. Number 4, NBA 2K17. Number 5, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. Number 6, Rainbow Six Siege. Number 7, Madden NFL 17. Number 8, Battlefield 1. Number 9, Neo. And number 10, Overwatch. Digital sales were not included for both Neo or Overwatch. I mean, the thing that kind of shocks me from this list is to see For Honor at number 1. I had no idea the game was selling that well. Because it kind of, I got the sense it kind of came and went.
Sleeper hit.
I guess.
Sleeper hit,
yeah.
2017 right here.
I guess so.
Did it come out at the beginning of the month, right?
It did, so maybe that's why.
It has a full month. Because at first I was like, wait, For Honor's on here and not Horizon. But I forgot. Time of the month matters.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Oh, wait. Was Horizon March? That was February, right? Yeah, that's February.
This is February. These are the February NPDs.
Okay, I'm always confused by that. Yeah. But no, I mean my old friend from high school, Eric, he was really in love with For Honor. I think I've told you. Right. Like the people who have played it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And like the combat is one of those like kind of learning curves, those steep learning curves. If you get into it really late, I don't know how good you would possibly be at it, because I think by then everyone's gonna be kicking ass.
I mean, I kind of got the sense that it was a hack and slash type game. So that's why I didn't. Maybe I had my own bias going in. It just didn't look like it appealed to me.
No, it's more like tactical, where you have to know what angles your enemies are coming at,
cool.
Shields, and it's just very particular slashes. Something that's popping out to me actually is this kind of late resurgence from Rainbow Six. It seems just the fact that it's still sticking around.
Yeah.
And if any has it been Has it been sitting here this whole time? For the
It's come in and out of the top 10, and I think what Ubisoft has done is that they created like seasons for all their kind of big tentpole games. So, and if Rainbow Six is one of those things where I think season one they had all these different maps and characters and skills, and now it's season two, and they're kind of doing what I think Square Enix has done with like Hitman, that it's coming out where we're going to have something a little bit for you like every month. It'll keep you playing, but it's a good piece of content and it keeps you interested and it keeps you invested. And I think that's what Ubisoft has just been doing with Rainbow Six Siege, where when the game came out, it kind of fell off, but then it had like this sudden resurgence where now we're going to introduce these kind of season arcs or whatever.
This is kind of the benefits. And this is the shining example of, I think, what DLC could be and should be, honestly, and probably what Destiny should have been.
we'll get to that.
What's kind of great is that Ubisoft could... I thought the Division was going to be the game that was like that.
Yeah.
It just... That's how they kind of sold it, that it was going to be the game they tailored to it, and somehow Rainbow Six survives. And I love Vegas. I've talked about that before.
Yeah, it's great.
How it was the game that got me into Xbox Live. And I still can't believe I haven't gotten an opportunity to play Siege. But what's great is that it's still like, it feels like if I went in, it'd be just as if it was the first month. So
yeah, no, absolutely. So, and then of course, anything else that stands out? Not really. I mean, Grand Theft Auto's still killing it. Battlefield 1 still in there. Nice to see Neo and Overwatch, even though we don't know. And they probably sold even better than they originally did, the fact that digital sales were not.
I told you Neo and like Nier, they're randomly really good games.
Yeah.
It's been a stellar year for video games right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Way it's too been many very good strong. Games. It's been very crazy. Strong. So EA will show the first trailer for Star Wars Battlefront 2 during a panel at Star Wars Celebration 2017, which takes place in mid-April. The panel, the galaxy-wide premiere of Star Wars Battlefront 2, they get to the point with that, will feature members of the game's development team from three EA studios, DICE, Criterion, and Motive. Wow, they got three studios working on this thing. You did not realize that.
Is Motive the engine, though? Oh, no, Frostbite.
He said that the teams. Yeah, no, yeah, Frostbite is the engine they'll use. It's set to begin at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, April 15th, and it'll be live-streamed online. Star Wars Battlefront 2 is scheduled to be released this fall, likely on PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One. I mean, that's cool. Hopefully that there will be more content within this iteration of the Battlefront series, and that... What I have actually previously read is that it's going to incorporate from all the different eras of Star Wars. So not only the original trilogy, but also the new trilogy. And they didn't say the prequels, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is some prequel-esque content in there.
Yeah, I don't. I'm just like...
You don't like Star Wars?
I hate this. I like have a vitriol towards this, actually.
Oh, because of the three studios that are working on one game?
No. Three studios. That's fucking... Hey, you see Criterion? Maybe... How about we get some Burnout? We get some Burnout?
Burnout doesn't sell.
God.
That's the thing.
And the fact it's 2 weeks away. Why is this how you tell us Battlefront, what the fuck ever, is coming out? It's like 2 weeks away, we're going to show you a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Cool?
Yeah.
And I'm sure plenty of listeners really loved Battlefront.
Yeah, no, there are.
And I'm here to tell you that you only like it because it's Star Wars.
I don't know.
Tell me I'm wrong.
In terms of like a first-person shooter.
There are better games.
No, there are better first-person shooters. And the game feels...
Bad?
It doesn't feel bad. It feels like an older type of first-person shooter, but that doesn't necessarily, I think, make it bad. Okay. No.
There's no weight.
There is. It's not like a Battlefield 1. It's not like Call of Duty, where, yeah, you can criticize those games for certain things, but they always feel good every time you play them. Or Doom, or like on any kind of type of arcade shooter. So, yeah, maybe they're going to address these things, you know, with this new iteration.
So. Just something about that is... I think what really makes me as upset is because it feels more like it gets this big extravaganza because of the brand tied to it, not the quality of it.
Yeah.
And that's just, there are better games out there of higher quality that do not get this. And I want you to think about something, actually. You know, you've complained a little bit about how Andromeda, you know, feels like it got rushed out a little bit.
There's a lack of polish.
Yeah, there's a lack of polish. You know, budgets probably got a little cut. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's because EA doesn't want to have two sci-fi games around each other. Maybe because EA wants to invest more in Star Wars than invest in Mass Effect.
Yeah.
And I want you to really think about the fact that Andromeda is not as good as it could be.
Yeah.
Well, because Battlefront exists. Because other Star Wars properties are out there. And that is exactly why that's happening. And you know it. You know deep down that's what EA is doing because it is too confusing and too much effort to have two really rich sci-fi things going on at the same time. Because Mass Effect is a holiday franchise.
It is. But it has come out in March in the past, like the Mass Effect 3 did. And I don't know if the first Mass Effect. I don't know. I get what you're saying, and it makes sense. Yeah. But I don't know if that's the case. Like, I don't know. Maybe because I don't want to believe that. But
I don't know. You should look at the way Disney... In thinking about Disney in this way,
okay,
the Disney had stuff like Tron, and which it wasn't great, but it was something. And they owned something else. I think it was Power Rangers at some point too. And they kind of just like let other people buy them, or they sold them because they owned. Then it was when they bought Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's because in their minds, in a business sense, well, I already own something that can target boys specifically. Mm-hmm. Disney was having a lot of hard times with boys. So, like, I've already got this extremely popular property that is good with boys, and it's, like, these types of properties. So I don't need that action. I don't need that other thing.
Yeah.
I don't need to put the effort into that other thing. It's the same exact mentality I think EA would have, especially how big it is, and putting three developers on this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. With Mass Effect, I think it's a little different because that game had a five-year development cycle, and there's an interesting story with that game, and maybe we'll learn about it in the coming months or maybe years, but like something happened. I don't know if Star Wars was that thing to take. When did EA finally get the okay? What, 2013, 2014?
Halfway through development, I would assume.
So I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thing that you bring up, and I think that's something that we could possibly talk about more in the future. Again, I just want to learn more about like what happened. Eventually, stuff's going to get leaked out.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's all about the leaks. It doesn't matter if it's in the White House or video game developers. We will learn eventually what's going on at EA. So. But we actually have, speaking of leaks, Destiny 2 has been announced. I think it originally came out from this Italian website. These posters just like, yep, this Destiny 2 is coming. Fall 2017, I think September 8th, I believe, is the release date for the game. But after that the kind of announcement, you know, Bungie went, ah, shit. And subsequently released two teaser trailers for the game, CGI trailers. And what I liked about them is that they had more personality and character and story than the last game or any of its subsequent DLC. Like, kind of the focus was on a character voiced by Nathan Fillion, this robot guy. That's Nathan Fillion.
Oh, cool. That's really good.
Yeah, the first teaser is like about a minute long, and it's him in a bar, you know, describing like what happened in the past, and I lost all my stuff, I got all blown up, and now we're fighting this thing. They're really joking around about it. And then the second one was like Nathan Fillion's character and some other guy, I don't know, another guardian. I guess they're guardians or something. And they're giving these like different types of speeches where the one guy who's like a classic hero is like very inspiring. And Nathan Fillion's just like, yeah, you guys are all kind of assholes and you might die, but we're going to get some loot, right? Yay. It's just like, wow. It's like this for the first time ever, Destiny feels like it has character and personality. Yeah. And it really made me go, I'm interested in Destiny for the first time since, I saw it years ago, and I was, obviously very disappointed by it.
I don't know. I can't remember if I relayed this off mic this last
week. You said this multiple times.
I've said multiple times that I've owned Destiny twice and never played it twice. But did I say on mic that I tried to return it? Because I tried to trade it in because I wanted to get Mass Effect and I wanted some extra scratch towards it. 25 cents. They offered me 25 cents for Destiny Collection.
And this was Best Buy, right?
This was Best Buy with my Gamers Club like unlocked thing. And I'm just like, cool, Best Buy.
Well, at least it's been better than GameStop. They probably said, we will take this from you, but you have to give us one of your fingers too.
So you owe us money if we're going to take it off your hands. It's just, as I hinted at with the Rainbow Six thing, one, I will say I do like the personality. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
But you got to feel somewhat upset, right? If you're a Destiny fan that this is happening, that they didn't kind of commit to what they pitched Destiny as
years ago.
Yeah.
Well, they pitched it as like this
10-year long cycle.
10-year long, yeah, cycle or
game.
Going to
live with the consoles.
Yeah, which is, you know, bullshit.
Yeah.
But I knew that ahead of time. I think we all knew better when the game finally came out when they said, "Oh, this is bare bones and has nothing." And then they went, "Fuck, we gotta restructure everything to make a true game." And where I think what people are gonna be like, I've actually read people online have been upset not because of that, but because they hate the tone. They're upset because they want this really dark and grim sci-fi kind of space opera, which I didn't think the original Destiny had that because there was nothing there to begin with. But I like that the fact they're interjecting this. You know, I don't have the baggage of like all these people that played the game and stuck with it for hundreds of hours. And so it's like, I'm just coming up with this like a fresh kind of perspective. It's like, I like that you're doing something different and you're clearly at least addressing the criticism that I had of the first game.
Yeah.
One of the big criticisms I have,
Deadpool in the game.
But, yeah, I'm totally fine.
It's
with
very
that.
Much.
Or Captain Mal from Firefly, which I'm totally fine for. Speaking of sci-fi games, though, we finally have the first trailer for Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy. And I thought it was okay. I was really kind of underwhelmed by the first trailer.
I really loved how long the title is. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, a Telltale series.
Yeah, that's going to be hard
to write.
And then the
greatest part about the trailer is you start it and then it says Marvel. Telltale Games. I'm like, I'm pretty sure the title of this whole game has, I get who's making it, I get who owns the property. Yeah, you know me, you know my feelings on Telltale. I was watching the trailer and it's funny. I was like looking for animation problems in just the trailer. And I think I did notice like one, like Groot's mouth kind of twitches right after he's done talking. I'm like, you couldn't even get that right for the trailer. I'm sure this was planned far in advance. And then I've complained, I think off mic, like, when are we getting the next episode of The New Frontier?
It's out this week.
This week?
Yeah. Well, it's last week for the people that are listening to this now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
It's come out, yeah. Finally. I think it's out right now.
Finally. No buzz. No press.
That's how Telltale does it. That's how they release
bullshit.
That's how they do it.
And, like, is it going to be out before Guardians is started? Because it starts in April?
Guardians is going to – the New Frontier is not going to end by the time we get Guardians, I imagine. No, there's no way.
Why are you working on two things at once? You can barely
do
that.
Well, they have – I think – well, yeah, okay. Fair enough, yeah. I mean, they probably should just country on one series at a time and make sure that it runs well. Like, I've already let you know what my experiences have been with the New Frontier. I think I liked it.
You didn't like it?
I disliked it more than anyone for the review. I know you guys, like, you spoke very positively of it for the most, you know.
And I'm excited to see where that one goes.
Yeah.
And, like,
I don't give a shit.
why diverge that audience attention to this new thing?
Yeah.
And I guess it brings up the question, like, the people who are going to play this game, are they more Telltale fans or are they more Marvel fans? But I really think you're a Telltale fan if you're going to play this game.
Yeah.
Like, the property will bring in some people. But I feel like a majority of the people are Telltale fans. Yeah. You want to see Telltale tell a good narrative.
They've played the previous games and they know what they're getting. It's just like, oh, it has this coat of paint this time. It's like, yeah, that'll be something interesting. I mean, I spoke about when I went at South by Southwest and I saw their live performance of the first episode. And
that's cool.
Granted, they said that this game's going to have some technical glitches and everything. I'm like, okay, like, I expect that. It's a Telltale game, right? 5 minutes in, there was no sound, no dialogue. People were just like clipping in and out of the scene. And every time I got up like after 20 minutes because they had to restart the demo or the full play, whatever you want to call it, again. And it's just like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to sit through, you know, 2 hours of this. You know, because it's like, oh, this is really bad.
Telltale, you need to finish your fucking game, please, Telltale.
Yeah, they definitely do.
That's crazy, though. Mm-hmm. That is just bonkers.
Yeah.
Prepare for a live experience. Like, come on.
Now, just one last thing, though. Apparently, the cast, which is always exciting to see who the voice actors they have for this. They have Scott Porter as Star-Lord. Scott Porter, who actually has been a lot of these people have worked for Telltale in the past. This guy, he played one of the main characters in The Walking Dead Season 2, played a character named Luke, who's kind of like looking after Clementine. He's a nice guy everyone likes. We have Emily O'Brien as Gamora, Nolan North as Rocket Raccoon. I think this might be the third time he's voiced Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, because he's him in MVC 3, Marvel vs. Capcom.
And I want to say he also voices him in one of the animated shows. He might possibly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so then we have Brandon Paul Ells as Drax the Destroyer and Adam Harrington as Groot. Now, I'm probably the only person who's actually a really big fan of Adam Harrington. I'm the one that knows of his work because he's in my favorite Telltale series. He's the voice of Bigby Wolf in The Wolf Among Us, which is my favorite Telltale game ever. Mm-hmm. The idea is that It's a crime noir set in the late 80s, except all the characters are fairy tale creatures that have escaped from their worlds. And
I think one of those characters is going to come up later in the episode, apparently.
Yes. Yes, she will. So the last news story for the day is that Call of Duty's next installment will return to a World War II setting if a series of images leaked to a YouTuber are to be believed. The leak was revealed in a video on Thursday by Family Video Gamers, a YouTuber who says it was emailed to him unsolicited by an anonymous source. The images depict a World War II setting above a name called a Call of Duty World War II. The poster is then followed by a series of four steelbook concepts showing what appears to be scenes from a beach landing, possibly D-Day. The steelbooks all have Call of Duty World War II printed along their spines. Back in early February, Activision told investors that the next entry in the series will take Call of Duty back to its roots, noting that the Infinite Warfare underperformed and that its futuristic setting just didn't resonate. The series has been set in the future since 2012's Black Ops 2. Four of the first five games in the series were set in World War II, the last being 2008's World at War. Sledgehammer Games is developing this year's game. The last one it made was 2014's Advanced Warfare. So clearly, Activision was looking at what EA did with Battlefield 1 and went, okay, we got to do that now. We've got so much shit. And because the fact that, you know, this thing clearly, or the Infinite Warfare clearly underperformed, you know, and that there was just so much negativity surrounding the game, they're like, okay, we need to address this and we need to go back to our roots.
People have been asking for this game for a long time, though. Like, yeah. I've been following a lot of esports Call of Duty players, and they have been asking for boots to ground Call of Duty for the longest time.
Yeah.
And I think Infinite Warfare, it's funny because Advanced Warfare, I don't think it's bad. I think it's fine.
I like it.
Was that the last one right before Infinite Warfare?
No, it was Call of Duty Black Ops 3, I believe.
Oh,
I think.
I love how these just start to blend together. Mm-hmm.
It could be all the one set series.
Yeah. You know? But after Black Ops 3, I remember people were just like, okay, I think we're ready to at least go modern times. Like, let's just have a normal Call of Duty now. And then they go even further with Infinite Warfare. So then it was just like, everyone's just like, let's stop. And it still sells a bunch. And I think that's more just the casual gamer is just like, I need one online game to play. I'm just going to pick up Call of Duty because, like we said earlier, it always feels good. It is always a competent shooter. It's never bad. It's just not interesting.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
And I think Battlefield 1 came at a great time because it came when that's what people from Call of Duty were asking for. And when they just went in such diverging directions. I'm really glad to see that Call of Duty is going to go in that direction because I think both of them can coexist in that landscape because Battlefield is so focused towards, you know, a different style of play. Yeah. We talked about in the review where I tried to play it like Call of Duty and I tried to play the more Call of Duty focused modes like a team deathmatch, and I just don't like them very much. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're as good. And Call of Duty is really great at being a fast-paced game. Obviously, it'll slow down a little bit with the boost to ground in the World War II setting, but I don't know. I've learned to miss World at War. I really loved that game. I think it wasn't as good as 4, but it was still really good.
Yeah. No. And I like Sledgehammer's output. You know, in general, like I really enjoyed Advanced Warfare, and the fact that this is the studio that's going to bring us that classic Call of Duty. I think they are the right choice for that. So, yeah, I'm happy about it. And I'm definitely. I hope this is true, which it probably is,
because you know, Activision let out money.
Mm-hmm, they certainly do. So, John, I thought it'd be nice to have a fan on, finally. Because we have fans, by the way. Our era does have, in fact, have fans.
You sure this isn't the error part of the show? Do we really?
Yeah, you do.
It's not an error.
That
was just an may have made a sound of some kind. But yes, welcome, Alex Schweiger. Good to have you on, man.
It's great to be here. It's cold here in Chicago in the middle of March. And I've been playing a lot of weird Japanese games that just hit America.
No, that's good. That's what you do when you're in Chicago and it's cold outside. You know,
you stay inside.
Yep.
You stay inside and you play weird Japanese games.
Yeah, so far from what I know, Japan is coming and swinging this year when it comes to games.
yeah, of course.
The Persona's right around the corner.
Oh, that is right. God. That's right. And I'm just about to get my Switch in. with Zelda.
You're about to lose a lot of hours, my friend.
I'm used to it, trust me. With Yakuza and Nier Automata, which came out, which, oh my god, both these games are amazing.
I've heard a lot of good things about Nier, actually, and it's just like one of those games that just like slipped by. Came out of nowhere for me, really. But I hope I get a chance to return
it. It came out around the same time as Mass Effect Andromeda.
Ah.
It's probably doing better, you know, in terms of critical reception than Mass Effect Andromeda, and maybe that's why it's going to be getting a lot more
attention. One of the worst things I've heard about Andromeda is this year's No Man's Sky.
I wouldn't characterize it as that.
There are some elements, though.
It has some problems. You know, I mean, we'll go into that when we eventually do the Mass Effect Andromeda review. But
yeah, well, you have me for Japanese games.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly why you have me on, Alex. Of course, you know, Alex, you're reviewing for us Yakuza 0, the latest entry in the Yakuza series.
Long-running Yakuza series. There are... Including Yakuza 0, there are 8 games, including a spin-off one with zombies,
which I heard
wasn't that good.
So you obviously have a lot of experience playing these Yakuza games.
Nope, this is my first one.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
Because I heard this is a good jumping-on point.
Yeah, because it is a prequel, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
So do you not need much knowledge kind of going in, or does it... I assume there's a lot of in-jokes that maybe could be going over your head, but, you know, those kind of things. I don't think they would hurt the overall experience, would they?
Well, yes and no. I did some research while doing some of these games, while playing this game, and some of the characters appear in future games. Like, the main character, Kazuma, mm-hmm. Kiryu's close friend, Nishigiyama, he appears a lot in this game, and it turns out Nishigiyama is the villain of the first game.
Oh, so spoiler for the first game. 17
Sorry, but the first game was originally a PS2 game, It was dubbed in English.
Didn't Mark Hamill, didn't he voice one of the characters in the Yakuza game? He is
Majima Goro, the one with the eye patch.
Right. And he is sadly not voicing the character in this game, though.
No, after Yakuza 1, all of it has been subtitled.
Oh, okay, so they only did the dub, like, for the first game. Interesting.
That is very interesting, actually.
Yeah, I looked up some clips of it, and Mark Hamill was far the best one there.
Oh, of course, he's Mark Hamill. He's good in everything he does.
And he is cursing like a sailor in that.
That's what I want to hear from Mark Hamill.
But everyone else... Oh my god, it's early 80s dub anime.
That actually sounds fun. Sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, although if you have one guy who's really good at it, you know, like Mark Hamill, everyone else kind of sucks around him, it's just like, oh man, I don't know about this.
Yeah, it's the Joker cursing.
Oh, perfect.
That's all you need.
Yeah, him cursing, reading Trump tweets.
Oh, now you're just bringing it back to the Pinky and the Brain one.
Yeah, oh, that's right, yeah.
Alright, well... I looked up some stuff. There's another Yakuza game coming out this year, and it's a remake of the first one.
Well, that makes sense. You know, get people to play this game, and then it's like, oh, now that we've introduced you to this world, you'll get you to the next one, which is kind of just...
That's a very smart move, actually.
Yeah, it is. Because no one's going to probably... A lot of people aren't going to play a game from 2000, especially if it's an early PS2.
Well, it's 2005 in Japan and 2006, I believe, in North America, so it's 10 years old at this point, but how often...
Original Yakuza?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was 2000, the original.
And not to my knowledge, Alex, is it?
Yeah. But apparently these games are spiritual successors to Shenmue, games from the Dreamcast, which I've never played.
Oh, okay.
Since the first game console I ever got was a PS2.
Right. Well, a lot of people, you know, that was their...
Because it was the best game console we've been through.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's all right. but for this game in general, what's kind of the main story? What's the premise? How does it start?
Well, it's the 1988, and there are two playable characters. Kiryu, the stable character who has appeared in every single Yakuza game, and the second time you're able to play as Majima Goro.
Oh, okay.
Majima Goro has frequently showed up as a boss character in most of the games. And he is by far the most batshit crazy person I have ever seen. But that is not his That is not his personality in this prequel game. It's how he became the Mad Dog, Goro.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, would you consider him to be the best character of this particular game?
No, they're both amazingly well-written characters. It's just that Goro goes through the most shit in this game.
So what is kind of the main story, though? Because you follow these two, so these two Yakuza gangsters set in the 80s, which is really cool. What's their story?
Well, there are two separate stories that connect at the end. I'm going off the box since it's been a while. Well, there's still some side quests I have to finish, but Kazuma Kiryu is a rookie Yakuza, and after a standard beat-him-up-and-take-what-money-he-owes job, the guy he beat up is found dead, and he did not kill him.
Okay.
So someone set him up.
Right. So it's like a mystery kind of revenge story, I get the sense.
Well, the mystery revenge story, yes, but there are a lot of twists and turns since it's a massive Yakuza conspiracy.
Okay. So what's kind of like the gameplay for this title? Because it's open world, right?
Well, it starts, from what I hear, Yakuza games are the definition of a slow burn.
Okay.
But I'm not angry. I'm really passive when it comes to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you start out pretty linear, you start talking about Nishikiyama and talking about what it's like to be a Yakuza. They go to a bar, and then he sings karaoke.
Okay, as you do as a Yakuza, you know, you beat someone up, you rob them, then you go sing karaoke.
You gotta let it out somehow.
Yeah, that's what you do.
And the karaoke in this game, while you sing, it turns into the music video of the song with them starring in it.
Yes!
That sounds so awesome.
This game goes from, oh my god, this is amazing, serious story, to the most over-the-top, goofiest shit you've ever seen.
Yeah, so it's like a really goofy version of Goodfellas, almost. And yeah, that's why I kind of get the sense of that. You know, I can definitely see how this kind of fills that niche, you know, for people who like these gangster games who want something completely wacky and different. You know, a sense of humor. I guess that is Japan. Yeah. So what's the gameplay like? And so, you know, you kind of go on this thing where it starts out very linear, but then does the game kind of open up? And what are some of, like, the activities that you do that progresses the story along?
Well, you can go to the Sega arcade.
Okay. Ooh, nice plug there.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, Sega.
But so far, the only playable games was Outrun and the Crane Catch game.
Wait, hold on. Like a full Outrun? Like you can play the entirety of Outrun or just, like, a couple levels?
He jumps into the thing and starts it up like a regular car. And then it goes right to Outrun.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's very Japanese. But I really like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a cool idea.
You should look up some clips when you have a chance.
Yeah, definitely check it out. So I guess part of from what I've seen for this game is that, I mean, you do fight other, like, you know, characters in it. I think you use...
Oh, yeah, there is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, basic combat, light punch and heavy punch, and as you have a health meter and a heat meter, which is 3 bars. The more successful hits you land, fills up your heat meter, which allows you to do very brutal finishers, which
okay.
I'm surprised people get up after.
So are there different, like, fighting styles, or just like or is it just one set fighting style?
Each character has 3 different styles, which are essentially normal, fast with light punches and a heavy punch. Oh, should I get to Majima's story?
Sure, yeah, go ahead. You want to just jump back in the story? Yeah.
Well, Majima Goro he is in Osaka running a cabaret club called The Grand, which is actually a money laundering scheme by the Yakuza, but he hates it because it's not in the front lines, and he's there because he defied the order of a boss,
mm-hmm.
which cost him an eye and being tortured for 3 years, which should have killed him, but it did not.
Okay.
When he's talking to the guy who checks up on him, his name escapes me at the moment. And I can tell he hates the fuck out of this guy.
Yeah, okay.
There's a way to get back in, and that is to kill somebody from the boss he defies request.
Right.
Should I get more into it, or?
I mean, no. I mean, that's. I think that's a pretty thorough description. So the idea is that you know, these two characters, their kind of stories like cross one another, and they obviously get up, you kind of get involved the same type of thing. Where from I get the sense is that they're betrayed by certain members of the Yakuza, right?
Well, Kiryu, yes, Majima, he sort of always kind of pisses them off mm-hmm. with his decisions. For Kiryu, he has to find the murderer and clear his name because the person who raised him was very high member of the Yakuza clan that he works for. And if he doesn't clear his name, the stuff he's being blamed for is going to fall on his head.
Okay. So, and I mean, what do you think, you know, people keep playing the series. It's so, you know, long running at this point. There's like, what, over 7 entries? Just in the main series itself, the numbered entries. And you have all these spin-offs, like a zombie game. What do you think it is that just gets people to keep playing them? That the fact that the series is still a financial success for Sega?
In Japan, mostly, it's because of the combat and the story, because this is one well-written story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, sorry to step on you, but real quick, in terms of the combat, isn't it varied in terms of the types of styles you can take? I remember you mentioned how it has elaborate finishing moves and such like that, but I think I read something somewhere about like different styles that they can take in the middle of battle, so I feel like that changes things up a little bit.
Yeah, you can change them up on the fly by pressing the T-pad, up, left, or right. The down button is for weapons you have on
you. And you hinted at that Japan is where it really sells. Is that kind of why certain... it's been 2 years, I think. This originally came out in 2015, yeah. Back in Japan. But it finally made its way across here. And I'm assuming from what you said that Japan is really... It's kind of the way here in America.
Japan's weird.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the way here in America that like a movie can bomb, but it can do so well in another country that it grants another sequel. So that's kind of what is happening. It does so well in Japan that you know they can afford to kind of send it over here in America and feed the niche.
Yeah, but right now this one has been selling well. It sold out on Amazon the first week it came out.
I think probably has to do with that good jumping on point that we had mentioned. Because it's I think the last one that released here was 5. I don't think 6 actually made its way here yet.
6 is next year.
Next year, okay. 5 had come out, and I don't know, it's just kind of hard to jump into a game when it's numbered 5.
When it's the 5th entry, yeah. It's like, oh, well, I didn't play any of the other ones. I don't feel like I need to play as well.
I once heard the director wants to get every single numbered Yakuza game onto the PS4.
Oh, wow, okay.
I think if 0 does really well, and you had mentioned that, you know, they're going to do a remake of 1... I think now's the moment, really. And what else yep. is Sega gonna like lean on? Sonic Forces?
Yeah, no, certainly not that. But I mean,
with the Sonic movie.
Yeah. So I mean, one thing I just wanted to kind of ask you: what are your kind of like your final thoughts in the game, and what would you give? What's your rating? Of course, as you know, we do arbitrary ratings here at oneofus.net.
Well, personally, 9.5 because there are some side quests that I have problems with. Well, actually, let's bring it down to an 8.
Okay.
There are some amazing side quests and some that annoy the living hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Pocket Racer side quest.
Is that like a kart racing side quest?
I think it's an 80s thing.
What kind of 80s thing is this? A lot of 80s things.
Oh, you know those go-karts with remote control RC cars?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like that, except it's on a track, you customize your car and you put on a track and you have to win the progress with the sidetrack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tend to find a cheat sometimes and buy the most expensive gear and put it on.
Okay.
And then it goes flying off the track.
All right. So yeah, it's just annoying that way. And what was your favorite side quest? What was the best thing about it?
There's ties from the weird ones, and so far the best is Help Miracle Jack Johnson film his zombie music video.
Okay, so zombie music video, as you would expect.
Michael Jackson.
He's in the game.
I love this.
Yeah.
We call it Miracle Johnson.
Oh, it's called...
There's a... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say Miracle Johnson. That's a great name.
And he is literally Michael Jackson doing the dance moves, and he goes, "Who's bad?"
As you would expect.
There's this disco dancing minigame in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s. And one of the side quests is, well, after you beat up his bodyguard, or because he doesn't know you're close friends with him.
Yeah.
He challenges you to a dance-off.
Okay.
This game literally goes all over the place.
Yeah, it does. And maybe that's why people like it so much, because it just stays consistently unique and different the entire time.
And then there's really weird side quests, like buying a kid a porno magazine.
Oh, that's dirty. I think that's illegal here. I don't think you can do that. Especially if it's just a random kid.
But I like how that one's considered the weird one, because I think all of these crammed into one game, I think it very much sums up what is kind of the best thing about some of these Japanese games, is that they're not afraid to kind of get wild. And I will say, just Alex, you telling me all these things, I actually do think I'm interested in this now. Just because I want to see all of this come to fruition. Mm-hmm. I want to see the weird Michael Jackson references. I want to race some cards, even if it is a little bad. But at the same time, I want to be a badass Yakuza with an eye patch. And that sounds super fun.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Alex, for like this review. The fact that you can influence me, at least, to check out this Yakuza 0. And I hope Alex influenced some of you listeners as well. I would love to see if any of you others have played it as well. Leave a comment and let us know what you thought about the game. And I'm sure me or Chris will follow up in the coming weeks or coming months when we finally get an opportunity to play through Yakuza.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Alex.
I'm losing my mind, John. Everything's going off the rails. It's just like, oh my god.
We re-listen to the way the show starts.
Yeah.
And both of us are just like, oh my gosh. We're losing it.
We are. It is
definitely a Freaky Friday.
Because I was like, oh, are we off today or something like that? And again, that's just me getting in my own head and me being crazy and super paranoid as I usually am. I'm thinking, no, that's a really good opening. Well, hopefully you all think that, you know, you'll tell us otherwise.
No, it
obviously.
Is a good opening. I'm going to tell you it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
It is good. But as we mentioned in the beginning, we are talking about crazy characters in video games. Probably what our favorite crazy characters are in video games. And there are quite a few. One of the things I actually noticed, kind of going through the list of like the great crazy characters, was how not all of them are villains. Like, some of them are good guys or side characters or characters that you play in a game. I'm thinking, huh, I never realized that. Because at first I was worried when we were going to do this topic. Is this just going to turn into, like, a top 10 villains of video games? Which we definitely should do in the future.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
But I like that that there was just so many unique types of crazy people in games.
Something I noticed, and I'll probably bring this up, but a lot of crazy characters have some of the funniest lines. And they're kind of – they bring a certain humor to the game, and I think if we're going to go down the list the way we have it written out, some of these first two entries have a really good example of that. The first one of which is Voss from Far Cry 3, a game we have talked a lot about recently
because it's so good.
Was it Bow and Arrows when we just like basically became a Far Cry 3 show? Voss is he's portrayed as the central protagonist. He is the boss
antagonist,
cover. But I tend to forget he's not even the main guy.
The thing, I mean, this is full spoilers, by the way, so we're going to go into, I think that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. It's 5 years old at this point?
Yeah, he dies like not even two-thirds of the way through. He dies like at the halfway. It's just like, oh. And then we're stuck with this German guy. I can't remember.
Dennis something.
Is that what his name is?
Dennis, yeah.
Dennis? Yeah, clearly he's not very memorable, unlike Voss.
Yeah. Voss, I was just looking through a lot of the sound clips, some of his pulls. He does this thing where, like, you're running away, and he literally goes, run, Forrest, run.
Yeah.
And he is always on the brink of a shouting thing. Like, he has these eloquent conversations with you, a la a Pagan Min, who I think is interesting, just a toned-down version of Voss.
He's not there. He's not in the game enough.
Yeah, he's not in the game enough. Voss, there's multiple times where he, like, captures you, and he spends long talking to you and kind of explaining. He's been keeping an eye on you throughout the game, and he gets pissed off about what you've been doing.
It's super,
especially because I think you, like, fuck his sister at some point.
Yeah, you do. I mean, his monologues are the best. Like, anytime there is a scene when he's just talking to you, it's wonderful. It's like, do you know the definition of insanity? And he just goes in this whole spiel, and that's actually... when they first premiered Far Cry, I think 3 at like, at E3, like years ago, like 2011, 2010, that was one of the first scenes that they showed, was just Voss's monologue to you. And then the game starts where you're playing. It's just like, wow, that's a really great way to introduce it, this wonderful character. And like, I like it even where he's like going through this monologue and he stops himself. It's like, okay, I don't like the way you're fucking looking at me right now. It's just like, and it just puts you on edge, but you're just fascinated with him.
There's a moment early in the game. I think it actually might be the start of the game. It starts off with the montage, you diving out of the helicopter, but it's actually him looking at the phone, looking at your video. And it's like, that looks like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And he's like talking and he's, just like talking to your buddy Grant, cause you play Jason, and you're just kind of describing what he's going to do and stuff. And then he's like, you don't think it's funny? Like, he just like turns to you. He's like, why aren't you laughing anymore? Yeah. You're not having fun. Mm-hmm. And it's great that way he does it. He gets really sidetracked by these expressions on your character's face that apparently like we can't see them. So it always comes out of nowhere when he's doing it. And I also noticed that like, he is not afraid to like kill his own sister.
Oh, I know. Point.
He is very pissed off about her actions. And anytime someone comes up against you, he's just, what's great about him is he, again, with the way he talks, it's a way his mind kind of thinks. He does hate you and he doesn't like you, but he is also detached the entire time. That he has so many, I think, things that he's thinking about that he's just like, boom, 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 bounce. And then I'll light you on fire or something.
Exactly. He'll definitely do that, or drown you or hang you or any other number of horrible things. But I just love the fact that he just can't stay on topic. Like every time he just goes from one thing to the other. And that keeps your interest. I just want to mention the guy that plays him or voices him. He plays him and he does the mocap for him is an actor named Michael Mando, who you've seen a ton of stuff before. He's done like Breaking Bad. Oh, really? He's actually a recurring character on Better Call Saul. The only thing is he's been typecast forever. He always plays like the gangster or the evil Spanish, you know, character in something, which is kind of sad because he's a terrific actor. And his performance is excellent.
Yeah, you said he acted. Was he the one? Did he also play Voss in that like Machinima?
That's him.
Series?
That is actually him. Okay. Yeah, with McLovin. Yeah, Christopher Mintz Plasse.
It's like a prequel. He like tortures McLovin and on an island, and he's like, "Oh, Jason's up in the air." Like he like gets a ping that someone's coming.
Yeah,
and he's like, "I gotta go welcome them."
Which is canon, by the way. That's all connected in the one same universe, which I love that. Yeah.
Run, Forrest, run.
Yeah, oh, God, he's such a wonderful villain. Probably another one that just immediately stands out to me is Handsome Jack from the Borderlands series. What a great way to just kind of reinvigorate your franchise, starting with the sequel, where one of my biggest complaints of the first Borderlands, even though I enjoyed it, was that I never got like any sense of direction where I was supposed to go. Like there was nothing that was compelling me forward. Like, the only thing was like, I just want to get a better gun and I open a vault or whatever and I get all this loot and upgrade my character.
That's what it was about. It was about loot.
But with the introduction of Handsome Jack, who is this just wacky but extremely charismatic CEO of this evil corporation, he just brings it to like, wow, for the first time ever, I'm interested in Borderlands world and story, but it's because of him, because he is providing so much of the narrative to you. And just like the way he interacts with you, whether it be in person or when he's constantly calling you to, you know, to mock you and make fun of you, you know, it's like, I'm just feeding pretzels to my diamond unicorn, you know, butt stallion, come here, girl. It's just like, what's happening? And I was like, yeah, and she poops guns too, by the way.
Is the butt stallion a real thing?
Butt stallion is a real thing. It actually shows up in Tales from the Borderlands, Telltale's series that's based off.
That's
the
what was
Borderlands
crazy
games.
Is one, I haven't played Borderlands 2 because of what you said about Borderlands.
So
is like, it was a cool idea with not a lot of meat to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It very much feels like the same sort of complaints we have about Destiny, where it's about a thing, but it doesn't take the time to add any personality necessarily.
Yeah, there's nothing unique about it.
Yeah, and so that game just, I don't know, after I played the game, I was like, that was a good time, but I don't need this. And it's kind of funny because I sort of realized that Handsome Jack is what revitalized the franchise, like you said, and he's in the pre-sequel. He's the basis of the pre-sequel, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like your friend throughout the entire game. Like he's on so many missions with you, and he eventually becomes an enemy because it's a prequel. Yeah. He's going to become a psychopath later
on. It's the in-between, right?
It's 1.5. It's Borderlands 1.5. Okay. Yeah.
And then I didn't know he made a cameo in Tales, so it's just kind
of... It's not a cameo. Okay, so this is spoilers for Tales from the Borderlands. He gets stuck inside your head. He's an AI intelligence, and he's just constantly with you, and he's just remarking about everything that's happening around you. And the guy that, by the way, who does the voice is Damian Clark. Other than playing Handsome Jack, he's probably best known for playing Cell from Dragon Ball Z, like Perfect Cell.
Oh, really? That's
yeah.
him?
Yeah, and how he actually got the part for Handsome Jack was completely by accident, where he was actually he was doing some voiceover for Dragon Ball Z, I think for one of the films that featured Cell, and he just happened to come across the Gearbox developers that were working on the game at the time, and they had this idea for the character, and so it was a complete accident that they kind of asked him, like, hey, would you mind just reading some dialogue? Because he was actually going to do, I think, like, some small side character, some addition, like, psychopath voices or something like that. Mm-hmm. They said, well, could you read some of, like, this dialogue that we have for this character that he's kind of, like, the main villain of the piece? And they were just captivated by for what he was doing, and then he ended up playing this character for years later. So
the history of Handsome Jack is actually interesting, because he was going to be a friend of me initially.
Yeah, he was going to be a vault hunter, kind of like, yeah, a character who would, you know, depending on certain choices you made, he'd either help you or hinder you throughout the entire experience. And
I think Gearbox, right? That's who developed
it. Yeah, it's Gearbox, yeah.
Really landed on some gold here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The fact that he did kind of continue the franchise. And I wonder, because Battle Borderlands 3 is in the works currently. I think they just showed off some Unreal Tech, how it looks and everything. I feel like he'll show up at some point.
The problem is the one mistake that they made of Borderlands 2 is that they killed Handsome Jack at the end, which was like...
Oh, did they?
You kill him. That's the last thing you do in the game. And I think Gearbox realized the mistake that they made and like, oh, we're going to go back in the past now and then because we're going to need more Handsome Jack. And then, of course, they did Borderlands, the Telltale series, and it's like, shit, this would be great if Handsome Jack. Oh, we have it where there was this scientist that worked at the corporation that Jack was in charge of. He was obsessed with Jack. He basically created an AI personality in case, like, if he would die, he would live on through this artificial intelligence. And so he's in Tales from the Borderlands. But the problem is, in that game, you have two different choices. How do you want to handle Jack? Like, I think it's the last episode where there's, like, two stories going on. There's the main story, which doesn't really involve Jack, and then there's this whole other side story of Jack and how he wants to, you know, regain his a body. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something like that.
Child's play with an AI.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. And you have a choice where you either spare Jack or you kill him.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, how do you go with that? You know,
well, you just say it doesn't matter what your fucking choice was.
Yeah, yeah.
Make a franchise.
Yeah, that is
true.
That's
exactly what's going to happen, Chris.
That's what it's a coloring book.
I can see Borderlands 3 being about someone found the AI. Like, you saved it and someone found the AI and is going to bring Jack back.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. Like,
yeah, I would love that
franchise.
It is. The other thing I just want to bring up too is this: like, yeah, Jack is a really funny character and he's insane, but there's like a sense of tragedy about him too, because he throughout the entire series always thinks he's the hero. He never considers himself a villain or a bad person. Everyone else,
he thinks you're the bad guy.
He thinks, yeah, he thinks you're bandits. You destroyed this world. I'm going to make it better. I'm going to make it in my own image, my handsome image. And you kind of delve into his past in all three games that he's in. Like when he kind of first started out as this kind of like, you know, like I forget what he's like a schlub working for Hyperion, like not like a minor executive or something like that. Always getting shit on constantly from his superiors, and you know when you're with him in the pre-sequel. Yes, it's called. You start to see those hints of his kind of madness coming out, but he's always consistently tries to stay good. And he's like really charming, and then when you learn like what happens at the end of that game when he's horribly disfigured, and then he wears like this plastic like mask or whatever, you know, to keep up this persona that no, everything's great. You also learn that he has a daughter who he loves dearly, but he's imprisoned her because she has these like super telekinetic abilities. And it's like, I use this to protect you, but like everything you do for me is like hurting other people. It's like that kind of thing. It's like really twisted and something's happened with her and where your actions in the game, affect kind of like what happens to his daughter and his personality changes from being like really kind of like a really fun loving guy who's, yeah, he's trying to kill you, but he's like, yeah, we're joking around about it. Right. To like, no, I'm going to destroy everything you have. I'm going to hurt all your friends. I'm going to make sure that you suffer forever. And it's just like, wow. And it's really disturbing that he goes through like these multiple different arcs and there's all these different wonderful like iterations of his character, like different interpretations of his character in each game. So every time you see him, it feels fresh. So yeah, he's one of the best video games villains ever.
They constantly have Borderlands, and I just realized this. It's called the Handsome Collection.
Yep.
I just realized how important he is. I fucking forget Borderlands exists.
Handsome Jack the game. I'm like, I wouldn't mind just playing as him.
It's been like $15 at Best Buy, and I think you just convinced me to buy it finally.
Yeah. I just realized you actually do get to play as him in the pre-sequel. There's a downloadable content thing, which comes with the Handsome Collection, where you play as one of his body doubles. And it's this handsome Jack that you're playing as. It's like, there you go. Like, they know it sells.
God.
Yeah.
I love this. Mm-hmm, I love that. I actually don't know much about the second one.
Well, you can skip the...
I take the lead on this one because this is... I just bought this game on Vita.
Okay.
Because it was like $3. One of the greatest RPGs of all time, apparently. And I told you I beat 15. So I need to get to some of these other ones.
You need to get to the good ones. We're talking about, of course, Final Fantasy VI and the main villain of that. Well, it's funny enough, he actually didn't start out as the main villain. But we're talking about Kefka Palazzo, the wonderfully sadistic, nihilistic clown in the game. What just stands out about Kefka is how he kind of operates in the story. Because when we're first introduced to him, he's not even, like I said, he's not the main villain. It's actually Emperor Gestahl, who's this very Emperor Palpatine-esque kind of guy. I want to rule the world.
The natural type of villain.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, very cliche. Whereas Kefka, who plays Gestahl, or who is Gestahl's court jester, but also kind of chief mage, is like, no, I want to destroy everything. He is the Joker of Final Fantasy, and where in the point in the game when you're, you know, playing it, when Gestahl gets this power, he's like, "Oh, I just want enough to control the world, and so I gain power, so my reign lasts for however many years." Kefka's like, "You know what? That's boring." Kills him, throws him off a tower, and so like, "I'm going to become a god now and just change the world so it fits into my image." And where it's not the world of life; it's the world of chaos, where everything is just falling in on itself, and everyone just serves me, and I can choose to destroy them or to reward them at my leisure. And just what stands out about him is one, his distinctive laugh, which is iconic in itself. But just the fact that Final Fantasy introduced a villain for the first time that felt unique and different and was not the kind of cliche that we saw, like a guy that's lustful for power. It's like, no, he just wants to destroy everything and make everyone suffer around him. But laugh about it.
What's great, well, it's only funny to him.
Yeah.
What's very interesting about this character, and I've always thought this was really cool, is we always have these giant plans of video games where a villain wants to do this thing. And he wants to destroy the world, and he wants to take it over, and he wants to build it in his image. Mm. Kefka succeeds.
Yeah, he does.
Kefka does what he says he's going to do and actually does it. And the only... is about halfway through the game? Half of the game is you have to try and, like, scrounge everybody back up.
Yeah.
Right? And beat him in his world that he already won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very sad, actually, when you think about it, because the first half of the game takes place in, like, the world of life. The second half is the world of ruin, of chaos. And the world, even after his defeat, the world's still fucked up. It's just like, we got to live here now because of the things that he's done. And, you know, Kefka's, he's been featured in other Final Fantasy games as well. There's small connections, and the fact that it's clearly this is like a multiverse type thing, but his influence is felt throughout all these other games, which I think is really cool. And one of the things that also stands out about him is just his look, where he is very Joker-esque. He's dressed as a jester. When you look at all the other Final Fantasy characters, like for that game in particular, you know, everyone's kind of dressed in medieval like uniforms or armor or kind of like East Asian kind of influences. But he just immediately stands out, particularly like the artwork for him, like all the drawings and things. Just like, wow, what a unique. He was for a long time my icon for my my PS3.
Little avatar thing.
Yeah, my avatar, thank you. But yeah, Kefka, he has yet to be matched by any Final Fantasy villain yet.
Something that is pretty great about him, and unique, I think, in a way, is a lot of these characters that we're going to talk about, they do have kind of shades of gray. Like, they do this thing where it's like, like you said with Handsome Jack, he's like, he has a daughter, and he, you know, eventually start to feel for him a little bit. And Boss, he's a little crazy, but he does have a sister, and he like... There's something wrong with him, and you can kind of feel because he has this human element to him.
Yeah.
That's not the same with Kefka. Kefka is just, there are no gray. It's just bad, right?
He is pure evil. Now, there is a sense of tragedy with his character because Gestahl experimented on him years ago, and he was like the first one to ever like infuse magical crystals with a human body. And though it gave Kefka, you know, supernatural abilities, you know, power over magic, it made him completely insane. And Gestahl kind of kept him around as, both an advisor, but also as a joke.
Yeah.
Which is probably, you know, really cool, the fact that, you know, Kefka gets his revenge on Gestahl after all these years, which, you know, Gestahl did not expect that to happen whatsoever. So, which again makes it so satisfying.
It's very much Joker-esque, too. The way he operates. It's just like, no, that's boring.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It just does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so great. One I can speak on and one I do enjoy is GLaDOS.
Mm.
Again, she is just a lot of fun in a sense in her very monotone, the way she delivers things. Yeah. You suck, basically.
Mm. You are fat. Or whatever. It makes fun of your weight throughout the entire
series. Oh, yeah. You made it through. Good for you. Something about most people get malnourished, but somehow you got fatter.
Yeah.
And she gets more and more antagonistic through the second game, especially as you learn more about her. But it's that monotone thing. She's like an AI that just kind of loses its hinges,
mm-hmm.
and it gets worse and worse as you go through the game.
Yeah.
And she gets more and more frustrated with you as she cannot kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just great to see her just bug out, but never really lose her cool. In a sense, because her voice is so monotone. Yeah. I think that's what makes the delivery so fun for me.
It's what makes it unique, yeah. Because her voice, is always consistently monotone, except for, like, when you, like, take pieces of her, like, oh, you know, off or whatever. Like, you know, she parts of the game where you kind of disassemble it to a certain extent. But, yeah, but she has those wonderful jokes, but it's always delivering that monotone
voice.
She's
so flat.
Yeah.
She delivers it so flat. But there is, and I don't know too much, I cannot remember all the detail, but isn't she... You know, we talk about how all these characters have weird backgrounds. She is like the brain of Cave Johnson's wife, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Of Shell's mother, as you learn.
Is that Shell's mother?
I believe so. Okay. I don't think it's said outright.
Okay, that's
but
what I was
going to
say. I couldn't remember if it was like.
But it is Cave Johnson's wife. You are correct about that.
Eventually becomes a potato.
I am a potato. I mean, that's the other thing. We don't have him on this list, but like I put Wheatley, you know, in there as someone who is kind of crazy, who has delusions of grandeur.
Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, they're both. I mean, but GLaDOS is just so far superior.
Space Orb. He's also crazy.
Space Orb.
Space.
All the orbs. Space. Yeah, great. But yeah, the one thing that I think we have to mention with GLaDOS is the songs, too. You know, I mean, what's
Jonathan Coulson?
Yeah. I mean,
still alive and I can't remember the second song.
It's not as memorable, but it's
Turret song or something. It's just called Turret song.
Maybe it is called, but I mean, that's great too. And that just adds to her personality. So, now another character that I really love is, Sandra Cohen.
He's not crazy. He's just an artist.
Art is crazy. But again, we'll eventually go into another character that's on this list that is from BioShock. But what just stands out about Sandra Cohen is how he is. Well, like when we eventually learn, like all these people have been exposed to this chemical in Rapture called Atom, and it brings out kind of their worst tendencies. And so for Sandra Cohen, it's to continuously improve his art. And the idea is that he's kind of presented himself as this kind of like mime or like not a mime, but like a thespian actor type. And then he goes around this sunken city capturing all these people and turning them into statues or freezing them or using all these types of weapons to create like these really horrific and disturbing like images. And he's actually one of the friendliest people you encounter in Rapture, which is interesting because you kind of go and he's like, oh yeah, you can help me with my art. You can take all these pictures of all these things that I've created and you can show off how talented I am. So at first he's like, you're clearly disturbed by him, but not to the point where like someone, you know, say Dr. Steinman, who is always completely aggressive towards you no matter what. It puts you, Sandra Cohen puts you at ease, even though you realize this guy's fucking bonkers.
I think that's what makes it creepier.
Yeah.
Is the way you had mentioned with Handsome Jack that he thinks he's the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Sandra Cohen doesn't think anything's wrong with what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just kind of
like,
this is art. This is my art. You should appreciate it because it is good.
Yeah.
And you're right. He isn't very confrontational. You don't see him until you complete his artwork, correct? He just kind of communicates with you?
Yes, you are correct about that. Yeah, he just communicates. But that's the thing. When he does come show up and he's just like,
and he comes
hey,
out,
how
and
you doing?
It's very great because it's very theatrical.
Yeah.
It's like, my art!
Yeah.
It's complete! Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I think spotlights are coming down, confetti's falling, mm-hmm. just like grandiose down a ballroom staircase. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's just like frozen, like you said, like frozen people coated in plastic with framing pictures of dead associates of his.
Yeah, it's like, these are people he's all killed, but he can't move them anywhere because they're frozen to the ground or for whatever reason. He tasks you with going around Rapture, taking all these pictures and bringing back to him, and he rewards you. That's the other thing. He gives you a nice reward for all your hard work.
You don't have to kill him.
You don't. And you, well, if you do kill him, then I think you get unlocked something, but you do encounter him later on in the game. It's completely side optional where he does try to kill you, I think, at one point, but you could completely miss it.
Well, actually, he can survive even that encounter. Yeah. It's like you come across not a ballroom, but like a room, and there's Houdini splicers dancing around.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's like watching them, and you're allowed to watch them too. But if you ruin the dance, he gets upset at you tries to kill you.
Yeah.
But if you just like sit there and watch the dance and leave, I don't think he does anything.
Yeah.
He just kind of walks free.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I thought that was really interesting that he doesn't do anything. He doesn't think anything's wrong, and he also lets the environment kind of.
Yeah.
He lets the environment and his actions speak for themselves.
The environment shows his madness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you can say about is a lot for the other characters, but particularly him because he is an artist.
Another one that, again, I'm not very familiar with. Why she's crazy, but I do know, I have seen like clips in it. It's very interesting. I was going to say when we were talking Destiny that I don't really think Bungie are great at writing characters necessarily, putting in personality.
Yeah.
But I think the one time I can really think about that is, you know, just experience this with Cortana. She is like the emotive, oddly enough, the more emotive of all the characters.
Yeah, she's a AI intelligence, and yeah, she has more emotion than the main character you play as, yeah. And however many games. And,
like, I've played all these games. I've played the games. It's just like I don't remember them. That's the thing.
Sure.
I don't remember much of any of their stories.
It's interesting of Cortana because, she introduced as your kind of AI companion, the Master Chief. She follows around. She provides you with exposition. That's really what her function is in all the games. However, Bungie's original concept for Halo was that she was going to be the main villain and that she would supplant 343 Guilty Spark, who actually probably could have been on this list because he's like this wonderful kind of superintendent. He's like, oh, what's this? It's so unique. I'm going to kill you now. Yay! It's like, you know, because he's been there for millions of years. But the idea was that, you know, Cortana learns about like what the rings are and what they can do for like AI intelligence, and she would, you know, take over 343 Guilty Spark and be, you know, think of herself as a god. That was abandoned for kind of a more traditional type game. You know, you can criticize it for that if you want. But as the series went on, you learn a little bit more about what Cortana is and like really the lore of Halo, where AIs have a lifespan and it's about 7 to 8 years. If you go beyond that, AIs typically start to develop something called rampancy, where they start to like bug out. They have glitches. Yeah, they start to deteriorate and they go crazy. And that's what they introduce in Halo 4, which to me I thought was the last great Halo game, because what was so good about it is that it focused on Master Chief or John's relationship with Cortana and the fact that out of everything that he's ever had in his life, Cortana has been the most consistent thing. And he realizes over time that Cortana is starting to lose it, that she's not in control of herself anymore. And because she's not in control, John doesn't feel in control. And it's really about this relationship that is determined, that is going crazy, that, you know, John, he's a space marine, doesn't have much personality, but there's this one thing that makes him unique is his relationship with this character. And of course, in the most recent game, Cortana, they finally did do the storyline where Cortana is the villain now, where she views herself as a god at this point. And it's kind of, sad.
Five was the one I didn't play.
Yeah, so yeah, five is the one you didn't play. And we're, you know, John, it's screwed up because they really fucked up that game. But what I would have hoped is that they would have explored that, where it's like, no, this is John trying to save Cortana, not like trying to retrieve her so he can help her on missions, but save a friend. And I think that's what makes Cortana's rampancy so interesting and makes it. It would have kept me invested in the Halo series had it been done correctly.
I can't remember this. Did Bungie do 4?
They did not. It was 343 Industries.
Okay, because I was about to say, wow, it took Bungie 4 games to actually like put emotions and narrative in their games. Oh, they couldn't even do that.
No, they didn't.
They made like, what, 4 games already? Couldn't do it.
Well, 5, technically, ODST.
Your character doesn't
it's...
That game is very good. I like the mood.
You're right, 5 games, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just like,
Reach as well.
I don't know. I know a lot of people have love for Bungie.
They did
revolutionize like consoles and stuff.
Yeah, first person shooters. Yeah.
Not great at story.
No, but I do appreciate that 343, you know, double down.
That is like, really good. 343 was like, well, if we're going to take control, we're going to put some, like, we're going to focus on, I think, what is the best part of Halo. The most interesting part of Halo is this relationship between these two characters.
Yeah, in terms of its narrative, yeah.
Yeah, and those are some of the best bits, like, from Halo, is that you can tell that John feels some sort of emotion.
Yeah.
And, like, actually cares about her. Mm-hmm. And that's the only time I've ever felt like, oh, this is a person. This is an actual character that has lines and is, like, has something going on. Yeah. I remember a particular scene, she, like, screams at these army base guys, these Marines.
Yeah.
And, like,
we're not leaving this planet.
Yeah. And the general, like, is freaking out. He's like, we have to destroy it. Yeah. And, like, Master Chief is like, no.
Mm-mm.
No. It's so interesting. It's the most interested I have ever been in Master Chief.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of cool that Cortana, when she flips out, can pull that out of someone. Because I think that is another thing about these characters, is some of them can – they have to hold – a lot of these games, I think, in terms of Voss, because like, Jason's not much of a character.
Yeah.
Your Vault Dwellers, from my experience, they've never really been much of characters. No. I don't know if they come out really.
In the sequel, the Vault Dwellers from the first game, they're actually characters that you don't get to play as, but they're like, actually crazy personalities. People. Yeah, exactly.
But in this instance, they have to lift. Especially with GLaDOS, too. Like, she has to carry the game.
Yeah.
In this one, Cortana brings the best out of the other characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's what these people who are giving these expressive type of performances are really good for.
Mm-hmm. And which makes her, again, her insanity so tragic. Yeah. So
one of my personal favorites, actually, and I'm going to skip one because I think you can speak to it a little better than me.
Sure.
But one of my personal favorites is Trevor Phillips from Grand Theft Auto 5. I think he is one of the most interesting and best aspects of Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah.
I like Grand Theft Auto 5. I don't think I love any Grand Theft Auto. Except
any Ballad Grand Theft Auto?
I think the only one I love is Ballad of Gay Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is like, this is a cool game and this is fun to play, but I don't think they do anything where I'm like, yeah. I've never played Vice City, though.
Oh, see, Vice City's my favorite.
And I do really like San Andreas, but it's been a while. I would need to go back.
Yeah.
But Trevor is one of, from the jump, he is like, fuck the rules of this game. Mm-hmm. I'm about to go all in, and kills Johnny?
Yeah,
with I don't know if he kills him, but he like
he kills him.
He beats, okay.
I mean, he says, "Oh, his brain's on my boot," or whatever.
Like you've spent an entire like good chunk of a mini game, basically, in the Lost in the Dam, playing Johnny and like building up these brotherhood relationships, and Five and Trevor just like fuck that, you dead. I fucked your bitch.
He kills all of those characters that you met in that DLC campaign. It's just like Jesus,
and he's one of those characters that it's. Rockstar has a lot of fun with, and it's just like, we're going to throw away the rule book because we're just going to go all in with this. And I think he's also a perfect, again, a compliment to the other characters where, like, I think we've discussed before, Michael is the standard by the books type of Grand Theft Auto character. He's like done it before, but he's drugged back in. Franklin is interesting because he's kind of like this up and comer.
Yeah.
And he feels very young, I think is why I like Franklin a lot too. He's got too much heart, I think, for the business.
Sure.
In a sense. And then Trevor has no heart.
Nope.
And he does not care about anything. I think actually, can you kill him?
There are endings where...
There's multiple endings, right?
Yeah, because I think the ending where you take control of Franklin, who cannot die, and you have an option to either kill Michael. Player. Yeah, obviously. You either kill Michael or Trevor, or you the third ending is where everyone lives. I think there's like some prerequisites where you need to get to get that ending. I don't think it's like anything in particular. Yeah. Well, he's natural.
I don't think it's too complicated because I didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, I didn't either. I love all these characters. But the thing that made me interested, makes me interested in Trevor, but also kind of extends to all the other characters as well, is Rockstar's pitch for them, where Michael is the Grand Theft Auto character that won. He had his happy ending, quote unquote, where he got everything that he wanted. He had this criminal career, and he finally has the house and the wife and the kids and the money.
And it sucks.
Yeah, and it sucks. Franklin is the Grand Theft Auto character we typically see in a lot of these games, where he's up and coming, he wants to be bigger than he actually is. Maybe, yeah, he has a soul that's still there, but he's just wrapped up in this criminal lifestyle. Trevor is the Grand Theft Auto character that lost. He loses everything because of his own selfish desires. But we love those selfish desires because it keeps him really unique. For me, Trevor just stands out, because of that introduction that we get, but also because he is what everything that we ever do when we're not playing like a main mission, Grand Theft Auto, when we just go off and do something completely crazy. Like, I'm just going to go over here, take this cop car, steal this, shoot this person, rob this store. He is that that he's thing that we become.
He's the player unhinged.
He is, yeah. Which is like, wow. Like, Rockstar, after all these years, finally gave us that type of character.
I'm just remembering, isn't there a section where you can torture a person?
Yeah, that's one of the things. And it was controversial, which I'm thinking, of all the things in Grand Theft Auto, that's the most controversial thing? Like, he brained some guy on the side of the street.
Well, I think it's more that it was like an interactive thing.
Oh, sure.
I can see
waterboard
that.
And, like, the guy.
I think, when did this game come out?
2013.
Right? 4 years ago? Rockstar is doing a better job of supporting this game than Bungie did with Destiny.
Well, they certainly did. Still selling really well.
But yeah, Trevor, you kind of feel for him in the fact that
he's pathetic.
He's very pathetic. He feels, there are points when he does feel sad, but he is just a sad character, mm-hmm. I think. And I think a central element of the game, if I'm remembering correctly, is his relationship with Michael. And kind of, Michael tries to distance himself from Trevor a lot. And I feel like Trevor's like, no. Like, there's something about the fact that Trevor keeps coming back. He covers it in a lot of anger and shouting, but there's a lot of, like, stuff hidden and a lot of problems with him. There's plenty of side missions, too, that kind of dive into that. They're, like, one-off, but the language that Trevor uses to shout out is kind of like, where is that coming from?
What makes him charming is his incredible loyalty to everyone. Where not only to Michael, which he still considers his friend, even though it's revealed like what Michael did to him and lied to him for all those years, but also with Franklin, where even though, he acts crazy. Like, one of my favorite moments with Trevor and Franklin is when, like, Trevor's like, hey, Franklin, and when he, like, hopped over the fence in this one mission, and he kind of falls over on himself, and, like, Franklin just starts laughing, and Trevor just freaks out, like, well, stop laughing at me! And, you know, it's like, Jesus, okay, man, take it easy. And he's like, Trevor's like, I'm sorry. I just want to kill you sometimes. It's like, so he does care, but
it's just an interesting way in which he shows the care.
Exactly, yeah. Someone who does not care about anyone is Psycho Mantis from Metal Gear Solid. One of the most, I think, iconic bosses, and really, iconic characters from the original games, who's been referenced throughout, not only the first game, but also, like, I think, 2 and 4 and 5, of course. But Psycho Mantis is kind of like this Russian like spy who has telekinetic and telepathic abilities, and how you're introduced to him in the original game is probably one of the most brilliant, I think, gaming moments of the PS1 generation, where he breaks the fourth wall and in a way communicates with the player. It's like, that's like, he's reading not only Snake's mind, but also the player's mind. It's like, oh, I see we have a lot of Castlevania saves on your PS1. It's like, what? Which is true.
I see you enjoy Sweetie Coden.
It's just like, oh my God, this is brilliant. And I mean, that boss battle in itself and how he's able to control different things and throw things at you, and where you have to unplug your PS1 controller and plug it into the second dock to fight him. And of course, because Kojima, he loves storytelling, and he loves to give these characters wonderful backgrounds. Because I had to read up on him, like, okay, who is he really? But yeah, he apparently is from this, like, Russian village, and he was the product of this kind of really horrible upbringing where his father was extremely abusive to his mother. Mother died in childbirth, giving birth to him. I think he had one of his first, like, kind of psychic episodes when he learned that his father, like, hated and resented him and wanted to kill him. So Psycho Mantis decided, well, I'm just going to burn down the village and kill everyone in it, because as you do. And he did that, and you kind of just learn how he kind of fell into all these different organizations and his connections to all the previous games and, like, Big Boss and his relationship with Big Boss and how complicated it is and how Big Boss has some type of affection for me, even though it's like, this guy can go off like any second. He's an atomic weapon. He's a weapon of mass destruction, and he's so unhinged. And then you learn, like, later on, because as you do, he ends up working for the FBI, and he goes into the mind of a serial killer because he needs to find out stuff like, where you had all the bodies. He then adopted that serial killer's personality, and he is that person. So he's an amalgamation of all these different people over time. Anytime he connects with someone, he takes a little bit of that person, puts in himself. And you learn that he's just this, and when we see him in the Metal Gear Solid 1, he's not even what he originally was. He's so many different things. He's so broken outside and inside. It's just like, wow, what a really cool character.
I think it's a perfect example, like you describing that boss battle in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really makes me kind of sad that I couldn't be there and play the games when they first came out. Sure. That at this point, I know all the tricks and I know all this stuff. Because imagine, I don't know if you got to play it when it first came out, or like before it really got crazy, but like just imagining Psycho Man is coming out and like knowing the games I played,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm trying to fight him and I cannot win. And then when I finally realize I have to like unplug the controller and put it in the other port, and I was like, why? Like, what are you doing, Kojima? Like, all it just it's a very outside the box way to think,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, just. It's a perfect example of, I think, why Kojima has stood the test of time and, like, the way he develops things and why Sakura Manus is the first of many characters
yeah.
that Kojima would go on to, you know, create with his writers.
Expand upon.
And yeah. it's just, it's wonderful to see that Sakura Manus still holds up to these days.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just an interesting thing.
Man, he was in 5 last time. He's in it briefly. You know, a couple of cameo appearances. Mm-hmm. But when you, coupled with all the stuff you read about him and learn about him, the fact that you see him as a kid, you're like, Jesus Christ, you don't have a bright future. So, pretty cool.
One I wanted to mention, technically not a video game character.
Yeah.
But he's definitely been in some of the yeah. best games of the past decade. But the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mark Hamill's performance in Arkham City and Arkham Knight and Arkham Asylum is some of his best Joker work, honestly.
Yeah.
I think City is the best of all the games because, and I think of the performances because the Joker in that game is very weak.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still, even on the ropes, he is still thinking 8 different ways, thinking about 8 different starting points and 17 different finish lines and fighting until the end. And it's just, he naturally is the one who kills himself.
Yeah.
In a sense. And it reminded me a lot of The Killing Joke in a way, the mm-hmm. way the game ends with a joke yeah. in a sense. And it perfectly encaptures it, like encompasses what I think about the Joker
mm-hmm.
in that I'm just going to cause some chaos. Ultimately, I'm going to be the one who destroys myself, but yeah, it's going to be kind of funny.
Yeah. And what's that great line, you know, Batman says, you know, after everything you've done, I still would have saved you. And the Joker goes, that's pretty funny. And he dies. I actually had the Joker on this list originally. I was like, well, I thought maybe when we do our best villains list, he can be on it. But he deserves to be on here.
I think we're diving into a lot of what makes a good villain
mm-hmm.
in these types of, deep character histories. I'll dive into it at the end because I feel like I'm probably going to get really serious with it.
Okay.
But I do have a lot to say about what makes a great villain in these kind of things.
Awesome, awesome. Now, another one that really stands out to me, hopefully I'll be a little more eloquent with this one, is Dr. Steinman from Bioshock. You know, I won't awkwardly stumble through as I did with Sandra Cohen. I was like, yeah, he's a mime, I guess? I don't remember. But Dr. Steinman, actually what's cool about him is he's one of the first psychopaths you actually introduced to mm-hmm. Rapture. And even before you eventually meet him and his lair of plastic surgery and torture, you learn about him through all these audio diaries that you start to collect. When he is crazy and when he's not crazy, when he's starting to, you know, succumb to his insanity, where the idea is that he's one of the greatest medical practitioners in the world. And Andrew Ryan, the creator of Rapture, says, well, you know, come to my city where you can, your abilities can be limitless. And he does that and he's able to, you know, revolutionize like plastic surgery things and different types of surgery. But he's again exposed to Adam, which brings out his darker tendencies and where he starts to hallucinate. And where the idea is that he doesn't consider the flesh he's working on like, you know, alive. He considers it as an art piece, much like Sandra Cohen in a way. And he has these wonderful, moments where he's talking to like Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of beauty, and only he can hear yeah. and see her. It's just like, Jesus Christ. It sets the tone for the game. It's not only the atmosphere, but like how far the city has fallen because yeah, you kind of really splicers, but they're all like, you know, they're people you just shoot. But this is the first character you really interact with who's like completely lost it. And when you eventually meet him and it's like, it's this wonderful, like, cinematic scene when he's torturing this woman on a table, operating table, and he's like, oh, you're a failure, you know, this one was too fat, this one too ugly, this one too symmetrical, and he sees you, oh, you're ugly, ugly, and just he goes off the rails, and then you have to kill him. It's like, wow, that was a great, you know, beginning boss battle, but even after you kill him, you're still picking up audio diaries and you're still learning about him, even when he was a normal person, quote unquote, normal person. Was that better than my Sandra Cohen description?
To be fair, I remembered a little more about Sandra Cohen than I did about
Dr. Steinman.
Dr. Steinman. So yeah. Like, we even each other.
Yeah, there we go.
But you know, on this one, what I really wanted to say is talking about Cohen and especially Steinman, they both show how the greatness of Irrational Games, right? 2K. Mm-hmm. There's narrative storytelling and the way they found a way to talk about these characters outside of just dialogue straight to your character. Mm-hmm. With Cohen, it was a lot about, you learned about his craziness and his evolution in his environment, in Fort Frolic, in these art pieces, as he says.
Right.
Whereas with Steinman, it comes through in these audio logs, and it's, you learn a little bit about him before your confrontation. Like you said, you learn more about him after he's done. And I don't know. I think it's very interesting that they don't spend too much time with him. Like, face-to-face, you don't interact with him as much as I think you would normally. Or at least like you would think. As much as we remember them, we don't have that much face-to-face interaction with these characters. And I think that's a unique element of Steinman and Cohen specifically.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the writers for the game and also the voice actor. Like, I think Dr. Steinman is voiced by Peter Francis James, who's I've never heard of him, but I mean, he does such a great job.
He actually reminded me of the last two people that I kind of want to give a call out to in this is Richard Traeger from Outlast.
Oh, God.
Very, very new one.
Hey, buddy.
Just his that voice acting and just the way we know my experiences with Outlast and how like I just like was anxious throughout. And Traeger was one of the big ones because he's one of the ones that stands out with the way he's first introduced. At first, you think he's going to help you, and then you're just tied in a chair. He's like cutting you up.
Probably the most horrific sequence in the entire game.
Yeah, and it's kind of usurped by Eddie Gluskin.
Thank you for bringing that up. I was just thinking
in Whistleblower.
Darling, as he says.
That is one of my favorite audio bits that we put in when I had to search that haunting song that he's singing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You spend really short amounts of time with these characters because they're obviously short games and they're only parts of them. But I don't know. They make such an impact.
Yeah.
With minimal knowledge of them. You just know one simple fact. They're fucking crazy and they're going to kill you. So.
Yeah. So probably one other villain I just wanted to bring up is Bloody Mary from The Wolf Among Us. Of course, you know, I've talked about The Wolf Among Us before on We Are Air. And just kind of the one thing that just stands out about her is that she's really the first real threat in the game that you encounter. She's kind of the second to the Crooked Man, who is this gangster within the series. And how when she's first introduced, she completely fucks you up. And tries to kill you. Of course, you play the character in the game as the Big B, the big bad wolf, and where it's like everyone in Fable Town either respects you or is afraid of you, except her. And she, but what she does to you is that one, not only she's trying to kill you, but she's enjoying it. She's relishing it. I mean, because she is a sadomasochist. And I can't really name or think of any villain or any crazy person in a video game who is just relishes causing so much, like, physical pain, like almost like gets off on it to a certain extent. And that's what's always stood out to me about her and her delivery and how she's kind of hot too in her craziness, which I'm like one of her,
what does that say about you?
Yeah, I guess it says a lot. Like, I just wanted to read like her, one of her famous quotes, Tweedledee, what's that? You know, that thing the Mundies call me Bloody Mary. That's it. And do you know why they call me that? Because some of them, they think it's funny to have their little sleepovers and go to the bathroom and say my name 5 times in the mirror. They find it less funny when I actually show up and feed their lungs to the family dog. Arf. And she has that kind of like Heath Ledger-esque, like Joker drawls, like a little bit of an accent. It's like, wow, she just immediately stands out. And it's weird. It's like she's very like, I don't know, it's like, not to say sexual character, but there's something that just stands out about her that that I just kind of gravitate towards in a weird way. Which is probably, this is about crazy people, right? Not like weird sexual fetishes or anything. But yeah, she just stands out because she is very crazy and one of the best villains that Telltale's ever created.
I have never had any experience with this character or this game, but you have.
I mean, look at her. They're just kind of hot. There's a little red in the hair and the black.
Yeah, that shell shading right there really does it for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've talked about this game so much, I really need to check it out.
And she'll go, oh, here's her true form. Look at that's hot, right? It's sadomasochist because the glass is all on her face.
Isn't that what Bloody Mary is like a demon?
Yeah, she's like a, yeah, she's like the devil. Okay.
That would make sense then why she like gets enjoyment.
Yeah, exactly. So, see, I'm not crazy. I'm not reading into
it. That would make sense why she gets some sort of enjoyment out of pain. The last thing I wanted to mention, it wasn't a character, unless you had any left.
That was my last one. Okay. I don't know if you have any more.
No. What I wanted to mention was the fact that as we talked about these characters, I've really thought about the importance of these crazy sort of maniacal characters. We've dived into them, and a lot of the ones that really interest me when you've talked about them is this, the games show what made them this way. And I don't know, it's just we have long interactions with these characters where we fear them at first and we're very hesitant to interact with them, and we're taught to fight them.
Yeah.
Where we start to learn more about them and we learn why they're this way, and it's kind of sad, and I don't know, it's very intense and emotional. It makes me think about like the larger scope, maybe potentially what games can say about people.
Yeah.
Like real world people who may have some sort of disability or may be neurotic in a sense and may not be able to articulate in the way I think is seen as socially acceptable.
Yeah. Like me when I'm trying to describe this character before. Yeah, and I get that. But,
like it shows us that people who are different from us or who may be a certain way towards us that we may fear
have this
deeper story to them if we put in the hours to kind of learn about what made them this way and kind of consider what made them this way.
Yeah.
I think it gives us a much better appreciation for these people, and it may make us in the real world learn how to handle them. I don't know. I know that's a bit serious of an ending, but I really think talking about all these games and playing all these games since we've made this show, it's made me kind of think about games a little more critically and really think about them deeper and why these artists put the time into crafting these characters. Sure, a lot of them are for fun and for enjoyment, but like looking at BioShock specifically, I feel like a lot of things in that game are saying so many different things about nationalism, about American, gluttony of money, of anything, the corruption of man and the corruption of power, and how we approach different people and how we treat people. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to mention that because I think that's an important element of video games that I think gets often overlooked.
You know, yeah, I mean, gaming is, it can be great for storytelling, but also kind of just looking at character. I think what games succeed more than even when it comes to like gameplay and stories, but it is characters, because you can focus either on the protagonist you're playing or just a simple interaction. And it feels at times even better than like a movie, because it's your interaction with that particular person, whether that be a villain or you know, a hero. And no, I completely agree with you. And I think I've learned to kind of recognize certain things that games are doing and think more critically when I'm not stuttering and shit. It's late. I'm tired. And my throat is very parched.
Dude, we talked to a microphone for hours on it.
We did.
But yeah, that's the end of the show. But we got plugs and a cool thing that we actually did last weekend.
We did.
A week from recording this. We interviewed Otacon from Metal Gear Solid. Christopher Randolph, the voice actor for Otacon, and Huey Emmerich,
the father of Otacon.
Great interviewee. Like, he was awesome. He's doing these. He was in town because he was actually in College Station working on he was working on Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
And he was also telling us about something he's a part of, like this new bar crawl experience where actors put on a play in a bar for people, and you know people will drink and like socialize. All of a sudden a play scene breaks out and then once the scene's over, people move on to the next bar, and eventually it's this giant finale at like a fifth bar or something. But yeah, just all around great dude, super generous with his time, super generous with his answers, and he reveals the secret to making a killer blueberry pie.
Oh, man. I was very surprised how in-depth his answer was.
I was expecting for him to just say love, but he blew my mind.
It's like, no, I really appreciate that. But, John, how can people, follow you? How can they reach out to you?
I'm _JohnRomo. You can find me tweeting about video games, video game music, especially as I edit these shows. I think I tweeted out the hit jam from Jurassic Park Genesis a couple weeks back.
Oh, man.
You can also probably find me freaking out about the new KDOT track that dropped today. Kendrick Lamar is humble, is good.
I don't know who that is.
Well, what about you, Chris?
You can follow me on Twitter at Chris J. Herman. You can also check me out on Facebook and just look Christopher J. Herman. I'm the only one there, so just follows that. But, you know, now you listen to We Are Air. It's great. It's one of the best shows ever. One of the best, the premier video game podcast.
Yes, tell them as they get to the end of the show.
Yes. I did it in the beginning.
Like, subscribe, share with your friends. Yeah, rate us on iTunes.
Oh, yeah, you can follow us at We Are Error Cast on Twitter.
And send us an email at weareerpodcast@gmail.com.
I should start posting that probably with the episodes.
Yeah, I would love to just kind of hear what you guys want to hear from the show. Any topics that you have, any questions you might have had for Mr. Randolph or any other particular interviews, I would love to, like, ahead of time, we kind of know who we're talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys can give us the opportunity to let us know. Be sure to let us know your favorite crazy characters down in the comments. We get some interaction from, like, Michael and Nick and stuff like that. They always add something that I, like, really forget. They love that, like, I get called out and I'm like, oh, you forgot this. And I was like, oh, shit, I forgot about this. Or they bring up something that I feel like I need to check out. Yeah. So, yeah, let us know what you think in the comments.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, if you want to follow more oneofus.net content, check out Digital Noise, Somebody Likes It, all of our subscriber content, all good stuff. So,
bye. We out.